If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Lower.com, equal housing lender, MLS 112-4061.
From England, the two London youngsters who met while they were attending Westminster School and developed the top flight stars, ladies and gentlemen, Peter and Gordon.
Oh, Peter Asher is with us. Has your hearing recovered from the screams at the Ed Sullivan Show?
Oh, yes, I think so. I mean, it's not that I don't miss it, though.
No, exactly.
It was fun.
Peter Asher from Peter and Gordon, and also a unbelievable career doing so many things in the entertainment and music industry over the past decades. Guitarist, singer, manager, record producer, 37 certified gold albums, 22 platinum albums, 13 Grammy albums, managed, among others, James Taylor, Linda Ronstadt, Randy Newman, Carole King, and Joni Mitchell, and also, I might add, commander of the most excellent order of the British Empire. And I've never, ever been able to introduce anybody with that. And I only noticed it in some of the material that I was looking, doing homework, if you will, and it said Peter Asher CBE. And I went, CBE? What is CBE? Commander of the Most Excellent Order of the British Empire. Can you tell us about that?
Well, it's this award that they can give you in England, which is quite exciting because you get to go to Buckingham Palace, you know. Officially, they're all from the Queen ultimate sense, but in my case, any member of the royal family can give it to you, and I got mine from William. And it was very exciting. I mean, it's great. You go inside the palace and go queue up and get your CBE, which is a very nice piece of bling, you know, that you can only wear on super special occasions.
Yeah,
and it was exciting. I confess.
I love the fact that you refer to it as bling.
Well, exactly.
No, it's
royal bling, exactly.
It's royal bling.
That's right.
Of course, Peter Asher, along with Gordon Waller, some of the great music of the 60s and quote-unquote British invasion, Lady Godiva, I Go to Pieces, True Love Ways, Sunday for Tea, Nobody I Know, Worldwide Love, one of my personal favorites is Woman, and then after that, into a spectacular career as a record producer. But I think that there's some like evergreen iconic tiny stories that needed to be included because they need to be included in every interview that you do. I don't want this one to be any different, but could you do a quick story about how it is that Paul McCartney and John Lennon wrote I Want to Hold Your Hand on a piano in your basement?
Well, because Paul was living there at the time. Paul was staying in our house in the guest room. And my mother, who's a musician herself, a classical musician, had told him that if he ever needed a piano, he could use the one in the basement because he didn't have one in his room at that point. This was quite soon after he'd moved in. He stayed with us for about 2 years. And on a particular occasion, John Lennon came over to write with Paul at this stage. They were quite often writing face-to-face, you know, mm-hmm. directly actually with each other. And they went down to the music room, and interestingly enough, no guitars, just the two of them and the piano. The piano is now in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
I would bet. I hope so.
With its own little biography. Paul called upstairs and asked me a couple hours later if I wanted to come down and hear the song they had just finished, which I was happy to do. Came down and sat on this little tiny sofa opposite the piano. They sat side by side on the piano bench and hammered out that brand new song called I Want to Hold Your Hand. So that was remarkable.
Did you tell them? Did you tell them it was awful, or did you? I'm not kidding.
No, I'm only kidding. Could do better. Try again harder. No, the truth was, as soon as I heard it, I mean, it sounded amazing. And the ultimate test, of course, is that what you really do is ask them, please, please play it again.
Yeah.
And that's when you know you've got a hit, because just like when we all had 45s and would wear them out, putting the needle back in the opening groove again and again, you know. And equally telling was the fact that they were very happy to play it again because they knew how good it was. I think they knew that it was a remarkable song. I don't think they knew that was the one that would break them in America, but it certainly sounded good to me.
You know, I know you've told that story so many times, but it's an amazing story for the rest of us who consume your music, the Beatles music, the entire British invasion, and the idea that your youngsters, teenagers, you know, in the basement of this house, and they're at the piano, yep. and they write this song.
I know.
And it goes on to become, good Lord, the opening of an...
I know, it is extraordinary. I mean,
it is.
It's just a crazy question of somehow miraculously being in the right place at the right time, I think, you know, but it was extraordinary. I was aware at the time. It's one of the few times that you actually think to yourself, this is a moment I will remember. This is something kind of special.
And if you don't remember it, then people who interview you like me will continually bring it up.
Remind me all the time.
over the years. We're talking to Peter Asher, and we will continue after this on 720 WGN. 720 WGN, John Landecker back with Peter Asher. I saw you perform. I asked my wife this morning how long ago it was. We saw you in Three Oaks, Michigan, and it was a great show. You had a sort of a multimedia presentation.
Yes.
You told stories. You had a small group with you, and then through the magic of digital whatever, you were able to perform some of your songs with the late Gordon Waller. And I just thought it was really impressive.
Well, thank you. It took a while to put that all together because, you know, when Gordon died, I realized I'd got a couple of options. You know, am I never going to sing those songs again? Or maybe I can think of some way that I can incorporate them into an overall show and talk about the 60s and about music and this, that, and the other, and incorporate talking and singing into the same show and some videos that help prove my points. And that's what we did, and I'm still doing it, you know. I change it quite often and talk about some of the things I've been doing lately and so on.
Yeah.
But it's fun. I still enjoy doing it very much. I think I'm doing New York in a couple of weeks at the City Winery, and, you know, so every now and then we find a cool place to play and add it in.
Yeah, I was looking at your upcoming concert schedule, and that the winery in New York was right there on the list. Are you going to be performing in the UK and over Europe too, or did I misread that?
No, you're correct. It's which is going to be kind of different, actually, because what happened was Graham Nash is doing a tour in the UK and asked me if I wanted to be his opening act. And I said, yeah, I would be honored, and it would be fun because Graham's a friend and a great singer and a great harmony singer as well. So I thought it'd be fun. But in that particular case, I'm doing without the video and with just a couple of musicians and doing like a half-hour set, you know, before Graham comes on.
Right.
So, It's going to be different and exciting to see what happens because you know, I think Peter and Gordon were probably bigger in America than they were in England. But we had hits both ends, sometimes different hits. You know, something would be big in America, something would be big in England. Like Lady Godiva was a big hit here and not so much in England and things like that. So I'm playing in October, I think. With Graham at theater tour in the UK, which should be really exciting.
Oh, that's
going to be very different.
That would be that's a fantastic double bill. I'm going to go see Peter Asher open for Graham Nash. Oh, I'll take a couple of those tickets too. Thank you very much.
Good.
So you leave the world of... Oh no, hold on a second, John. Back up. So you're still performing, obviously. And even though it's no longer, you know, Peter and Gordon, you still must have that spark in you, that DNA, that musical DNA in you to want to be out there and perform live in person, even though you've got this spectacular reputation and award-winning career as a record producer.
I suppose so. Yes, both. I mean, I think I'm just a ham and like being on stage. I don't know what it is, but I think it's mostly because I really like singing. You know, singing with people, especially. I'm much more a harmony singer than a lead singer. I'm never going to suddenly bust out and become Bruce Springsteen or anything. But I think I enjoy singing harmonies and I enjoy singing with other people. And I I certainly love still producing records, so I wouldn't miss any of it. But sometimes it is a question of juggling, because I just finished an album project that took quite a few months, so there's times when I go, no, we have to take time off from performing for a bit, and then fit in some weekends here and there and so on.
Are we referring to the Barbra Streisand album?
We could be, yes, exactly. Yeah. Yes. That's the most recent one I just finished. And overall, to be honest, from the moment it started to the moment we declared it finished, it's been about a year. But it was incredible fun, and you know, she's so astonishing.
Well, that was one of the sort of tie something up here in a ribbon, so to speak, because going back to the beginnings there in England, well, first of all, the Ed Sullivan Show. This was sort of like the portal to America. I mean, you go through customs, whatever, you have a visa, but you really got to go through Ed Sullivan if you're going to make that big break in the States, wouldn't you say?
I would, yes, but you know, I don't know if you know the story of us and Ed Sullivan. It's a curious one.
No, please.
Well, you know, you would think when World Without Love took off and became number one and we flew over to New York, we would be doing the Ed Sullivan Show, wouldn't
you? Yeah.
I mean, that would be logical. But they actually said kind of, no, thank you, only because Bobby Rydell had sung that very same song, World Without Love, 2 weeks earlier. And he was a regular on the Sullivan Show. So he got, you know, he'd covered World Without Love the moment it came out. His manager, Alan Klein, coincidentally, used to have the British Top 10 sent over to his office every week. And he heard World Without Love and suggested Bobby Rydell should do it. And so his record of World Without Love actually went into the charts first. And he did it on Ed Sullivan Show. So when it came to be what would have been our turn, they kind of politely said, no thanks. And we actually did it a bit later for a song called I Don't Want to See You Again. But that's the why, what would seem to be quite mysterious is why didn't you sing World Without Love on the Sullivan Show? It's because they told us not to.
Well,
Bobby Rydell had already done it.
Well, for whatever it's worth, I was a teenager at the time. I graduated from high school in 1965, and I don't ever recall Bobby Rydell singing that song at all.
Yeah, he was on the radio and everything, but then rapidly, I'm proud to say that our record came out and crushed him, as it were.
Yes,
not to put too fine a point on it, not to be too competitive.
No, crushed him is a good way to put it. So, you know, you have this recording career start with Gordon Waller, and then you also that ends, and you get into along with Paul McCartney, Apple Records, and and in charge of A&R and signing new acts, and one of them that you sign is James Taylor, who you go on to manage. And then I want to jump to this Barbra Streisand album, which is called The Secret of Life Partners Volume 2, which I think comes out June 27th. And you're the producer, and I'm looking at the...
I co-produced it with Walter Happiness, yes, yeah.
And I look at the list of songs and artists that she is performing with, and lo and behold, there is a song called My Valentine with Paul McCartney. And then there is also a song called Secret of Life with James Taylor, which you have to admit is a rather spectacularly nice story arc, if you will, from all the way back there to the present with James Taylor and Paul McCartney.
Yep, it's true. I mean, we all got to catch up with each other, surprisingly, you know, because obviously James I see a lot of anyway. Remains a dear friend. But it was exciting to do it, James. I was very keen on James doing that, on Barbra doing that song, Secret of Life, which I thought, you know, who wouldn't know the secret of life if you were Barbra Streisand? And and she liked the concept and the title as well, so ended up naming her album after that song.
And there are many other very high-profile singers who do duets, so to speak. I mean, everything from Sting to Tim McGraw to Bob Dylan. What is it like working with all of those, that variety of artists in one project?
It's extraordinary. I mean, it's only Barbra. I mean, if you had to say to somebody, who list all the, these people: Sting, McCartney, Sam Smith, Bob Dylan, Neve, brand new people as well, Tim McGraw. You know, who would say yes instantly to doing a duet? You know, who would cause everyone you asked to immediately say yes without asking any questions? And the answer is Barbara Streisand. That's what all we had in common. Mm-hmm. You know, when you call up, normally you find yourself saying, would so-and-so consider doing it?
Yes.
Could we possibly find time? Things like that. But in this instance, they'd go, Barbara Streisand, yes. It's incredible.
When you produce an album like that, do singers actually share space in a studio, or are their tracks done individually at separate times and then put together? Or is it a combination of both?
All of the above.
Yeah.
Each case is different. I mean, in each case, you find you're dealing with the artists, with managers, with schedules, with timing, with could they be in the same place at the same time? Sometimes yes, but sometimes no. Some artists, they didn't even meet till after they'd done their vocal. Each one has a separate history, and they were all quite complicated, which is why it took a while to get it all done.
But
as you can imagine, you know, these conflicting schedules were complicated.
Well, not only that, but you as a producer, you're dealing with not only individual musicians who have their own, and singers and artists who have their own idiosyncrasies, but these are superstars. These are, it doesn't get any bigger than this. And you're working with all of them individually. So that must have taken some ability to adapt on your part, I would imagine.
I think it does. And, you make sure you've done your homework, you know, that you know the artists reasonably well. But in most cases, obviously, like James and Sting, and the people I've known off and on for years, and Paul, of course, McCartney.
Right.
And then people I didn't know at all. Like Sam Smith, who I'd never met before, who was super charming. And I was a big Leve fan. Someone had introduced me to her, and I was incredibly impressed by her music. And actually, that's why I fell in love with one song of hers and persuaded Barbara that it would be a good song to do as a duet with Leve. And she, you know, I was just introduced to her by a friend of ours, my wife and I, who is Icelandic, as you probably know. Leve is Icelandic Chinese by birth, so I met some brand new exciting talent in the course of making this record as well as people I've known incredibly well for a long time.
Well, you know of their track record as artists, and I'm sure that all of them know of your track record as a producer, which is just spectacular. 720 WGN. More with Peter Asher coming up, but right now it's the bottom of the hour. Time to get into the WGN News Department. 720 WGN. John Landecker, thanks for tuning in tonight. If you're just joining us, we're continuing a conversation with Peter Asher. What was it about producing that attracted you to it?
Well, that's interesting, Stas, because I was a manager and a producer, but for entirely different sets of motives.
Yeah,
because record producer was a job I actually actively wanted. I mean, once I realized what this job was, once I was in the studio myself with a record producer making the Peter and Gordon records, I kind of went, wow, this is, you can just be someone who can hire brilliant musicians much better than yourself and tell them what to do. You know, I think this is genius. And and the fact that you can sort of arrange and direct and invent, you know, an arrangement for the record and all that stuff. I was very excited about that. So I deliberately set out to become a record producer, whereas the manager was simply a case that there was nobody else we trusted to manage James Taylor. And I just thought, well, you know, how hard can it be? The answer is, if you've got an act as good as James, it's not that hard, to be honest.
Well, you know, speaking of different approaches to different artists as a producer, I was watching an interview that you had done a few years ago. And it was a discussion about being a producer and the different approaches that one could take. And I believe you told the story about David Crosby was producing Joni Mitchell's first album. And he stood outside the studio smoking a joint. And that was it. Because
mostly, because he stopped them putting strings on it, you know.
Yeah.
They might they would have put a bit, some sort of mushy strings on it. And he left Joni alone, which was exactly the right thing to do, and still is, by the way. Joni has always produced her own records, essentially, and she knows what she wants and she knows how to get it. So the task of record production can be many different things.
Yeah.
As someone pointed out, sometimes it's psychiatric help, sometimes it's, you know, whatever the day calls for. Because a lot depends on the atmosphere in the studio and the mood in the studio and who the artist is and what
right.
they like and how they work and so on. And obviously, when you haven't worked with someone before, you have to quickly figure out what's the best approach.
I would assume, I would think that by this point in everybody's career, your career and the artists that are involved in this Streisand album, that the idea of the record company executive having any input would be none.
Not quite, actually. There's a guy called Jay Landis who is the executive producer of this album who was working for Sony in an A&R context. And he was immensely helpful in helping us choose acts.
Right.
And he's worked with Barbara several times before, so he was pretty much the connection. So even though he wasn't an actual record company employee, he was a record company consultant and advisor and extremely helpful in that regard. So I would like to give him proper credit.
Well, then we shall.
Thank you.
The project with Barbara Streisand took, as you say, over a year. Was that correct?
Yes. I think just about a year from day one to the first day we sat down and Barbara was saying, I don't really know if what my voice is like now, and I'm not sure I can sing, and, you know, the usual artist insecurity.
And
then she opened her mouth, and it turned out, my God, can she sing?
Yeah, she can.
It's completely amazing.
That's what I hear.
What comes out of her mouth. Yeah. It's amazing.
So I anxiously await hearing that, and I've seen you now in person. The future, you, as we mentioned at the beginning of this, you'll be on tour. Do you have another job as a producer coming up, or what's next for Peter Asher?
No, there have been a couple of things under discussion, but am I committed to anything at this point? No, I'm not. So I'm going to go out and do some gigs and do the Graham thing and in Europe, all of which will be exciting, and then think about a new production project for the beginning of the year, I think.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being with us, Commander. I don't know, Commander of the most excellent Order of the British Empire. Thank you, Peter Asher. I've enjoyed your work and will continue to do so. Thanks so much for being with us.
I've enjoyed your questions. Thank you very much. This was a great interview. It's a pleasure.
Thank you. You know, I always like it if people think I ask good questions. John Landecker at 720 WGN.